Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
For me, that's a no-brainer. I mean, as a farmer, when I am getting tax breaks to help invest in foreign markets, to invest in markets, and to invest in trade, when I have trade, I have security in my market. I have better markets because more people are competing for what I'm growing.
Testifying at a Ways and Means Committee field hearing at the Iowa State Fair, Jolene Reason, President, Iowa Corn.
So just thinking as a farmer, so every dollar I spend in the community, now it gets rolled six times.
Yes, Ms.
So
Ryan,
so it's like it. So the people that I touch with what I'm doing for, you know, the farming sector of it, it's huge. So, and just know that any monies that, you know, everybody likes less tax.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, the producer sentiments reflecting the challenges that they're facing.
Dr. Darren Hudson is director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness at Texas Tech.
You know, what we've seen in especially the last 12 months, I mean, we had the cost acceleration, general inflation that was taking place. You know, and that has, you know, been sort of baked into the pie in terms of cost of production this year, but commodity prices have weakened significantly. So what they're looking at is a situation where they're probably below water in a lot of ways in terms of what they can expect out of revenue versus what their cost of production has been. So that, you know, that challenge looking at, you know, one, this year, how do they cash flow? And then second of all, next year, how do they get the financing, you know, based on, you know, lost equity that they dealt with in this year. So I think, you know, it, generally speaking, if we look historically, you know, this year is not great, but by far not the worst year we've ever seen. You know, the debt load that we carried into this crop year in the aggregate across farms was lower, in part because we had some pretty good years price-wise. But that's, you know, that's eroding quickly. You know, when you're losing $300,000 or $400,000 a year on a farm, it can deteriorate your equity pretty quick. So, you know, I think the biggest challenge right now is, the older generation farmers were probably in a bit better shape. The younger generation farmers were just starting out, and so they were probably carrying heavier debt loads. So the higher interest rates, tougher borrowing situation is going to put a lot more pressure on them going forward trying to survive. So, you know, we've seen worse for sure, but this last 12 to 24 months has been incredibly challenging for agriculture, and it's going to continue, you know, if things don't change pretty rapidly.
And he talks about the fundamentals of low commodity prices.
There's some fundamental issues related to prices. You know, we're at a relatively strong dollar, which tends to put pressure on ag exports, which drives down U.S. commodity prices. So, you know, there's that layer of it. But we're also in, you know, as the Fed has tightened money supply, you know, you've got a lot of pressure on base prices, which is what the intent is. It's to drive, you know, kind of wring out the inflation, if it were, as it were. And so all of those factors, plus, you know, with several years of global high inflation, you know, overall demand is not nearly as high as it was. So you've got that sort of triple whammy effect of things happening all at the same time. And then you add to that sort of the movement of money. You know, the stock market has performed relatively well. So, you know, the hedge funds and the big institutional investors who drew a lot of profits out of commodities in years when those markets were a bit weaker are pulling that money out and headed in the other direction. Also, we see, you know, interest rates sort of moderating now. And so bond prices are rising. Same thing, right? It's pulling money out of the out of base commodities over into these other more traditional equities and debt markets. So all of this stuff is sort of a dangerous confluence, which has put a lot of downward pressure on price. And, you know, there's fundamental reasons why those prices are too low at this point. So we should see them recover some, but it's just the timing that seems to be the issue here.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You mentioned the DTN report that came out recently, the yield tour, the digital yield tour, and it basically showed really good expectations for yields in terms of the three I's, right? Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. So if those three states do well, typically, that's going to definitely help out in terms of the production. So we'll see if that continues to play out.
That's Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago, referencing the recent DTN digital field tour and crop tour, and now the Pro Farmer crop tour.
We also have the Pro Farmer tour, so we'll see if anything interesting comes from that. It started today, goes through Thursday, and they'll be working both ends of the Corn Belt, the Western and the Eastern Corn Belt, simultaneously, and then we'll get their summary come Friday. I would say that whatever they say at the end of the week, the tendency for their accuracy is tended to be a little bit shy. So I think it's like 9 out of the last 12 years, their yields in terms of corn and soybean expectations has been shy of what they actually ended up being. So probably less so comparing their numbers to the USDA would be a wise thing, and probably more so just comparing their year to year. So whatever model they use, whatever method they use, if you see some kind of data that, if you see data that comes out from their results, compare themselves with themselves. I wouldn't necessarily compare them with USDA yields because, as I mentioned, it hasn't been necessarily predominantly accurate. So we'll see how that plays out. Beyond that, generally speaking, for the month of August, if you look at the tendencies, which I like to do, if you look at December corn, pretty much August tends to be a more sideways at the lows type of month. There's about a 50-50 probability from now until the end of the month for it to go higher or lower. So flip a coin, we'll see what happens there. Soybeans actually tends to move higher around about mid-month August into the end of August. So we'll see how that plays out. That's just tendencies. This could be an off year where those you can just kind of throw them into the garbage, but that's the way things happen in the marketplace. But generally speaking, over the long haul, that's the tendency, is for it to move higher, soybeans to move higher into the November contract for the tail end of the month. And then for wheat, steady to lower would be the tendency for the Chicago wheat, that is. So we'll see how that all plays out. And just to kind of finish the thought with the other major market that we cover, cotton futures tend to also have a bit of a rally going into the tail end of August. So we'll see how that plays out. So again, those are potential markets that can move higher, right? I said soybeans and cotton. But don't forget, we're looking at some pretty big numbers in terms of the ending stocks and such with both of those. So I'm not necessarily thinking they may be ready to turn bullish, but I would say that maybe it might set up for some to be maybe a selling opportunity. We'll just see how it all plays out. So I would say that's basically the summary, the bigger picture of what's going on in the grains, kind of what I'm looking for. I'm just waiting for the catalyst. I don't know. There's a bunch of things that could happen, and I've been in these markets long enough to know that some things happen out of the blue, and all of a sudden your expectations, and you would say that the market's consensus is for the downside for these grains, but anything's something can come along out of the blue and turn it around quickly. So
that's Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
That recently came out this last week, and that was for the month of July. I think this is kind of an interesting piece of information. Kind of gives us an idea of what's kind of going on as far as general inflationary pressures within the economy overall.
Tyler Cousins is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center, talking about last week's release of the Consumer Price Index.
Last week, the CPI released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics for all items, the all items CPI, it actually measured inflation at it was actually 2.9% higher than a year ago. So interestingly, though, this was actually the first time this inflation rate has actually been below 3% in more than 3 years. Last time it was below 3% was March 2021, and that was actually 2.6%. So this rate is still above that target 2% inflation rate that the Fed is looking to achieve. But I think this is still a positive direction for inflation to just kind of see a little bit larger reduction than we were expecting here for inflation rate. And so I think it's a generally a good sign for the economy. Now, looking a little bit deeper into the data shows that inflation on the food side of things has also cooled in recent months, which is a positive sign for consumers who continue to feel the squeeze of inflationary pressures. Now, in July, the food CPI was actually up 2.2% from last year, which is in line with what we've seen for year-over-year changes since the start of the year. They've actually averaged 2.2%, so very much in line with what we've seen over the last few months. Now, keep in mind, a year ago, the food CPI was actually 5% above where it was a year ago, so definitely a positive direction for overall food inflation, reported by the BLS there. Digging a little bit deeper, BLS also reports a meat CPI, and in July, the meat CPI was actually up 3.1%. This is a little bit higher than what we saw as far as year ago. Year ago is about 2%, so a little bit higher CPI there for the meat CPI. Now, a rise in the meat CPI is not totally unexpected, as it would include price effects from beef and pork, which have fluctuated over the last several months, especially beef. And to kind of point that out, the all-fresh retail beef price in July actually reached a record of $8.15 per pound. This is actually 4.6% above last year. And this also marks the first time that the all-fresh retail beef price has actually been above that $8 per pound mark. Now, retail pork prices have held just below $5 per pound for several months now. July was actually $4.92 per pound. That's actually up 4.6% from last year, and the highest price since we've seen for pork since October of 2023. So the combination of rising beef prices, steady pork prices are likely contributing to that 3 to 3.1% inflation rate for the meat CPI. Now, on the poultry CPI side of things, that was actually reported up just under 1%, actually 0.9% in July. The poultry CPI has been tracking around 1% to 2% above a year ago since the start of the year. So a fairly moderate increase there as far as poultry CPI goes there. And a lot of that is just due to retail poultry prices. They've been holding steady since the start of the year. Specifically, the retail broiler composite price has actually been ranging from about $2.40 to $2.50 per pound since the start of the year. July actually came in at $2.41 per pound. So a positive sign overall for price-sensitive consumers. Now, kind of gave some discussion there on just the CPI and retail prices. Let's dig a little bit deeper into these retail meat prices. You know, I had mentioned some of the retail prices in the prior discussion. So let's look at these prices. So in general, consumers continue to still face relatively high prices, especially for beef. You know, I had mentioned that in the earlier discussion that with the meat CPI, that the all-fresh retail beef price was $8.15 per pound in July, which was a record. Now, overall, the last several months for the all-fresh retail beef price has remained in the upper $7 per pound range and finally reached above that $8 mark in July.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, there are elements of that farm bill that obviously need to continue, be strengthened a bit. Crop insurance being one, and looking at some options on those crop insurance provisions.
Dr. Darren Hudson is director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness at Texas Tech.
You know, there's some proposals about adjustments to average world price calculations. There's talks about, sort of raising those reference prices sort of trigger those payments a little bit earlier to try to reflect that higher cost of production. All of those are sort of good elements, sort of the devil's in the details, as it were. One of the things in our region, especially with cotton, is that cotton producers, the insurance program has performed relatively well for cotton producers. It's incentivized a lot of behavior that's not great for the rest of the cotton industry, right? So, not harvesting crops when, there's harvestable yield out there. The producer is behaving rationally the way the system is set up. They're making a decision that's in their best interest, which nobody can blame them for that. But what it's doing is taking cotton out of the system. It's not now moving through gins, warehouses, shippers, things like that. So the rest of the industry is suffering. You know, we need to figure out a way to not penalize producers for harvesting, low-yield crops, while at the same time, pushing that cotton up into the system. I think that there's a number of things. We can't sell cotton if we don't have cotton. And so, the rest of the world is growing a lot of cotton, Brazil, Australia, other places that are taking away significant market share because we just don't have a crop to sell, right? It's not because, in part, you know, it's lower cost of production. You know, we have high quality cotton. People want to buy U.S. cotton. We just don't have it. So anything that we can do in that farm bill scenario that strengthens the whole system as opposed to just the insurance component on the producer side would help the whole industry.
That's on the farm bill, but what are some of the biggest challenges ahead?
The biggest issues that we're going to face, I mean, there's sort of the micro problems of, you know, fiber contamination, things like that, that limit or deteriorate our position relative to the rest of the world. So I think we need to address those sort of micro issues. But on the bigger issues, you know, what we need to see or what we need to be watching for is a return to income growth globally. That stagnated through the inflationary period, and that's put a lot of downward pressure on products that come from the U.S., cotton being a primary one. And so, you know, if we don't see a return to sort of income growth, you know, it's going to put a lot of pressure on those, you know, those high value goods that that we produce.
And there'll be some unique challenges for farmers on the South Plains.
I think for us in this region, in particular, in the Plains region, is just water. How do we address growing cotton, growing sorghum, growing corn with less and less water? And so, you know, we've got to be pushing the frontiers on the yield technology and the irrigation systems and the management systems to maintain those yields, reduce the risk to those producers so that they can reliably grow a crop, you know, profitably. So global macroeconomic issues are the ones. And until we get some resolution right now in the short run from political instability, I don't think we're going to have sort of a clear path forward. You know, once we get past the election, hopefully we'll have a little more, at least know where we need to go. And those are going to affect us in the short run in that 2 to 5 year period.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Jolene Reason. I am a farmer and current president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association that has a membership of over 7,500 farmers and agribusiness associates.
Testifying at a House Ways and Means Committee field hearing at the Iowa State Fair on taxes.
So next year, I will be eligible for Medicaid, which means entertaining thoughts about retiring and passing the family farm on to the next generation, or for me, my two boys. So I, as so many other farmers, are making plans for passing that farm down to the next generation, and changing tax provisions are a huge part of that estate planning process. So here are my thoughts to you to carry back to Washington. Number one, leave the estate tax rate at $13.6 million per person and adjust it for inflation annually. Number two, keep bonus depreciation, which allows us to not only modernize our equipment, but allows us to farm more efficiently. And number three, keep stepped up basis, which allows us to transfer ownership of farmland and equipment, reducing capital gains tax for our heirs. If these tax provisions change, it will be catastrophic for us and so many others who need their land and equipment to keep in farm up, to keep the farm operational.
And explains how the estate tax can actually affect farms.
So let me just use my farm as an example. If the current estate tax rate stays at 13.6, I will be able to successfully pass my ground and equipment to my boys without placing them in a tax liability position. However, if the current level is reduced back to $6 million, here's what's going to happen. My boys will either have to sell all the equipment and 70 acres, or they're going to have to sell 275 acres of land and be able to keep the equipment. Both choices, in my book, are unacceptable, since selling 275 acres of ground would mean that over half of the land that they stand to inherit is going to be gone. And for me, it would be destroying what their dad and I worked so hard to build. So our story is more common than not. Currently, 97% of farms are family-owned in the United States, so you will be decimating what helped build the strong American farm economies we know today. With the possible sale of the land to pay the estate tax, chances are it's going to be a larger farmer that buys that ground, not a beginning or a small farmer, which would add to the vertical integration that's already going on in the countryside. Plus, now let's add the taxes of the sale of that land and equipment, equipment So then let's go to town and try and find a local lender to set up financing to be able to buy that equipment, to be able to buy that land back. And if successful, the interest rates are going to be incredibly high just due to the riskiness of that loan. Couple that with the depressed farming commodity prices that we have today. And oh, by the way, corn's down another 6 cents today. We'll make it next to impossible to service that amount of tax debt. So basically destroying any chance of my sons continuing to farm the operation that has been in our family for close to 100 years. I know this is a lot to think about, but I want to leave you with this. The current tax provisions are essential to preserving family farms and farming throughout the United States. Protecting these policies is key to ensuring that we can pass our farms on to the next generation, because when we protect farming and farms, we protect our communities, we protect our food, and we protect our fuel. All things that have and will keep our country strong and keep the United States the envy of other nations.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Now, across the retail beef categories that are reported by USDA ERS for July, most are posting gains in prices around 2 to 8% above a year ago.
Tyler Cousins is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
Specifically, in July, ground beef was actually up 8% from last year to $5.50 per pound, and that's also a record. Since the start of the year, ground beef prices have actually been tracking above $5 per pound, a trend that will likely continue through the rest of the year. Prices for chucks and roasts both reached record levels in July. Chucks were up about 7% in July to $7.78 per pound, while roasts were up 8% to $7.12 per pound in July. Prices for rounds in July increased 5% from a year ago to $8.06 per pound. Now, sirloin steaks actually increased 2% to a record price of $11.73 per pound in July. Now, switching over to kind of some of the retail pork prices, on the pork side of things, the July retail pork price was actually $4.92 per pound, an increase of 4.6% from a year ago. Now, over the last 12 months, retail pork prices have been tracking between $4.70 and just over $5 per pound, with an average of $4.86 per pound. So that July price of $4.92 is very much in line with the trend that we've been seeing over the last 12 months. Now, looking a little bit closer at the reported retail pork prices, bacon is always one of interest, and it was $6.88 per pound in July. That's actually an increase of 10% from last year. Bacon prices have been in the upper $6 range since the start of the year. Retail prices for pork chops continue to hold steady in the mid-$4 per pound range, a trend that has been in place for several months now. Ham prices have seen some strength recently, with prices in the mid to upper $4 per pound range. The strength in the ham price is largely being driven by gains from international demand for hams. Specifically, the U.S. exports a large number of hams to Mexico, so that's providing some strength there for those ham prices. Now, switching over to the chicken side of things, as I had mentioned earlier, according to USDA ERS data for the retail composite chicken price in July, it was $2.41 per pound. Now, I'll just note that since the start of the year, chicken prices have ranged from about $2.40 to $2.50 per pound, so that July price is well within that range that we've been seeing over the last year. Now, the fairly steady chicken prices are a positive for consumers, especially those who are a little bit more price conscious and looking to extend each dollar at the grocery store. Now, looking a little bit closer at retail, chicken prices, chicken legs and chicken breasts specifically, those prices have been showing a little bit of weakness here in recent months, falling about 5 to 12% in both those categories there. Now, chicken wing prices have softened a little bit here in recent months, but they did reach a high of $2.64 per pound about 1 to 2 months ago. Prices now are actually tracking around $2.50 per pound. But I think if you compare that to a year ago, that's still very high prices for chicken wings, because a year ago, chicken wing prices were actually $1.30 per pound. So still a big increase in those chicken wing prices. Forward prices at the retail side of things were actually $1.99 per pound in July. That's actually down slightly from the record price of $2.01 that was actually only set just 2 months ago in May. So overall, there's been some relief in retail meat prices, but inflationary pressures are still evident in some retail meat prices, specifically beef, for example, is one of those where we're still seeing some record prices there. But I think this is important to note, because this is still seeing some limiting. It's still a limiting factor for consumers who are, looking to save a little bit of money there and extend each dollar when they go to the grocery store.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Despite lower U.S. wheat production forecasted this month, the world is still expected to grow a record wheat crop this new marketing year.
We raised our production forecast by 2.1 million tons this month, so now we're looking at 798.3 million tons of global wheat production.
USDA World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jackanowski says the world wheat production increase was supported by a handful of nations.
Australia, we raised their production estimate by a million tons, and they've been getting some beneficial rain, especially in Western Australia. Kazakhstan, we raised the production there by 1.5 million tons to 16 million. That basically reflects some really unusually wet weather that they've been experiencing. Ukraine's wheat production forecast was raised 2.1 million tons. That's based on government data.
That combined increase offset reduced month-over-month production totals from the U.S. and the European Union. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.